Hopkins, who you heard earlier, and Sean Alimi and others slept in front of City Hall, getting arrested and ticketed again and again to bring to the awareness of the community the fact that homeless people have no legal place to sleep at night. And Byers was a part of that subcommittee, and she essentially said there was no point in taking it to City Council because there wasn't the will, even though I guess the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for once had a director of that the Community House program who wanted to set up a safe haven program during the time before Community House was being built. That's the trailer project at Highway 1 and Highway 9 that is now, it's a multi-million dollar fund magnet for the feds, I mean the federal money is put into, and I'm glad people have spaces there, the 30 or 40 people who do, though they're hardly treated as adults. It's sort of like there's no sex in the rooms, there's no visiting after hours, there's security guards, and so it's almost like a halfway house. But the point was that Byers did not allow a campground to even be considered for that place, and this is such an obvious need.
We also, at a CCH meeting where I presented asking the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to endorse the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, we were all ready to vote on it when Byers stopped the whole process, insisted the attorney look into it, and the attorney came back the following month and said, oh, if we vote for this, then we could lose our 503C nonprofit status, and she scared everybody into that board.
Was that an accurate assessment? Was that attorney correct?
No.
How do you know that?
Well, I've since talked to some people who are more expert on nonprofit organizations. First off, it wasn't endorsing something that was already on the ballot. It was endorsing something to be put on the ballot, a completely different situation. And secondly, if the issue falls anywhere under your rather broad jurisdiction of your mission statement, then it would be considered acceptable.
Well, I know that
several other nonprofit organizations did endorse the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, including Community Action Board locally, and they knew that. Catherine knew that.
It also has to be said that Catherine Byers refused to sign the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, as unfortunately did former Mayor Celia Scott, who was on many other issues was a civil libertarian.
Scott did.
Well, Celia's husband did, but Celia herself did not. Again,
and Christopher Crone signed it.
He did sign it, but he declined to bring it up over the 3 months of task force hearings that we had.
Well, you know, I did present the sleeping ban initiative, repeal initiative, to the task force, and they heard it, but they chose not to comment on any section of it, any part of it, pro or con.
Hello? Yes, it is going out. And I distributed a flyer, which I think I had a moment ago before you distracted my attention there, but I have it now. It was called Good Faith Effort or Premature Burial, Seven Solutions the Task Force Ignored. And my question was, has the Byers-dominated task force acted in good faith by addressing the heart of the issue, the human right and need of homeless people to sleep, or was it more concerned with pleasing conservative merchants and neighbors? And I guess there are other alternatives, like, you know, did it have impulses in both directions, but did it essentially cave in to pressure or apprehension? Or mainly, I think, pressure from Mayor Byers, because at the December 8th meeting of the City Council, both Crone and Sugar proposed very positive resolutions. Crone proposed a resolution for human rights, that sleep be regarded as a human right, and when he tried to include that, extend that to blankets, Byers balked and said, no, no, we can't add blankets to that or I won't support it. And Crone tried to say that the homeless people should be protected over the winter, since the City Council was proposing not an inch of extra shelter space, that if there were any tickets that were going to be issued, that there'd be a health and safety reason if those were sleeping ban tickets. And he got dumped on big time by Byers and Rotkin and John Barisoni, the city attorney. And eventually he just got crushed by Byers, who drew in Fitzmaurice as the kind of the wavering fourth vote that went, "I will go with the mayor," said Tim Fitzmaurice. And so there were some good impulses by Sugar and Crone at the December 8th City Council meeting. And the idea was to protect homeless people. How could they participate in this discussion? Well, they have to be able to do something at night to sleep at while this is happening. And then, of course, as the months progressed, it became even more serious because of the vicious assaults on homeless people, kickings in the face, the beatings that were validated and that were documented and brought before the City Council. And, of course, neither Crone, nor Sugar, nor Byers, nor Fitzmaurice, nor Rotkin, nor Matthews, nor any of the council members came up with any kind of protection for the homeless people. A protective idea by Kate Wells was to allow the Parks and Rec to do what they now have the authority to do, which is to set up a safe zone in Santa Cruz and in the San Lorenzo Park or in the Harvey West Industrial Park, currently provided for, actually, under the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative. That was never discussed at the task force hearings, though we tried to bring it up. We tried to put it on the agenda. It was never discussed at city council meetings. Byers, Crone, and Sugar refused to put those matters on the... And it sounds like we have a call from Agent Custard of the Biotic Baking Brigade. This, of course, was the group that went to... has gone to jail, the two of them, and the third is headed for jail for 6 months for showing Willie Brown a taste of a fine cherry pie, apparently in a somewhat embarrassing situation. Let's see if we can catch this person on the phone.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi there, Robert. How are you?
I'm good. Who's this? Okay, I'm sorry, we're having a little trouble with the phone line, but go ahead.
Okay, I was just calling because I got word from Katya that you were looking for information about where to send donations and support.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so far, in terms of any protests or vigil, there hasn't been anything set up.
Before we go any further, Agent Custard, we're talking, of course, about the three activists concerned with Willie Brown's vicious attacks on the homeless.
Right.
Vicious is really the word. He's clearing homeless people out of public spaces in San Francisco. The police are issuing thousands of tickets for so-called quality of life
fractions.
Crimes, which are actually life-sustaining activity that homeless people have to do in public spaces, which include things like sleeping. It's similar to our Santa Cruz situation. And I guess Katya and Justin and who was the third?
Jerry Livermore.
Jerry?
Uh-huh.
These three presented the mayor with a pie in a very public way to show the community just that the emperor here had no clothes, and he certainly had the pie on his face, if not more. And, of course, the mayor's response, still there?
Yep.
Was to, one of his aides broke Rahula's clavicle, her shoulder bone, her shoulder, and... And now they're facing, the judge sentenced them, yesterday, to 6 months in jail. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And I actually have some statements from Rahula, really eloquent statements I'm hoping to be able to read. And you may have a suggestion as to where people can write or call in to get checks and to get letters, maybe to find out how to visit them in jail, and or just how to carry on the struggle that they were fighting to.
Sure. Any and all correspondence and donations can be sent to Biotic Baking Brigade, and the address is 3288 21st Street, number 92. That's San Francisco, California, 94110.
Mm-hmm.
And checks could be made out to Jeff Larson.
And how do you spell that?
Larson.
Jeff Larson?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, again, that's Jeff Larson for the checks, and you can also, give us that address one more time.
Okay, that address again is BBB 3288 21st Street, number 92, San Francisco, California, 94110, and any letters of support and stuff sent there will probably be forwarded directly to them at
And if,
a new
if you,
jail facility by 850.
And if you missed the those numbers or addresses, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. There's no one on that line right now, but just leave a message and we'll get back to you to give you the address to which to write the three, the Cherry Pie Three, as they call themselves. And to, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's not funny to put someone in jail for 6 months for an act of political speech. And it's, I'm really glad you called in. Is there more you want to say about this?
About that? No, it would just be great if they, yeah, if people wanted to call the DA or the mayor's office and express their disappointment and dissatisfaction with them, that would be great. And there's another pie case coming down the line, either probably a trial date being set this week, on Friday, for the pieing of Robert Shapiro, who's the head of the CEO of Monsanto, who's in, they're involved in the biotech genetic engineering stuff.
Is there a number that they can call to get, let's say, all these numbers? So you have a phone number you can let us have that they can call you at?
Presently, there isn't a CBB.
Well, maybe what you can do is you can leave those numbers on the Huff line, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, at 831-423-HUFF. The district attorney's number, the mayor's number,
okay.
And I'll be able to pass those numbers on here locally to any interested people.
Okay.
And I thank you for calling in, and I'm going to be, if not tonight, and then on Sunday when the show has its next edition, 11 o'clock in the morning to 1:30, I'll be doing a much more extended analysis of what's going on up there, because we got a lot of good stuff. We have a half-hour interview with Katya Komisarek, the attorney for Rahula. And I want to thank you for calling.
Sure thing. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
We hear boat construction's going great. We're near lots of folks who just can't wait. They heard a candidate score a point in a debate. Now they'd like to inundate the Sunshine State. Ha ha ha, Haiti, keep them on Haiti. Don't you come in boats across the sea. We're counting the people. We got a place for only two or three. Clintons, ha ha ha, Hinton. That is pollsters, pretty scared. Ha ha ha, Haitians, don't come here. Unless you plan to work for Zoe Baird.
And that's a blast from the past, from the Capitol Steps. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Call-in number is 427-3772. Give us a call. We were talking about the City Hall brouhaha of Tuesday night that I guess will resume. There is a City Council meeting next Tuesday night, but the sleeping ban issue will reappear in a month, on March 24th, I believe, at 7 o'clock. And it will also be some task force meetings, although none this week, I'm told. We have our own discussion underway here, and there will be a Huff meeting tomorrow at 706 Frederick at 10:30 if you want to come to a meeting of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hello? Hello? I can't hear you, caller. Oh, boy. Try again.
Those old phone lines. Boy, Free Radio Santa Cruz could certainly use some new equipment. I encourage you to give us a hand. There was actually a donation for food which came in today for both Food Not Bombs and Free Radio, and that was much needed and much appreciated. If you want to help Free Radio keep its phone line, keep its equipment in repair so we actually can hear you callers when you call in, leave us a message at 427-4523 as to where your bank is, and we will go down there and gladly withdraw whatever you wish to give us. Or you can send us a check at Post Office Box 7507, 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. We'll try that phone again.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert Bernard.
Ah, Bernard, yes, so at least we can hear you. That's good.
Thank you.
And Bernard, we're talking about the sleep...
Yes, I'm wanted to rally, my decision a little bit. You know, have people start talking about it. I want to talk about, doing some concrete type of organizing.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to put it out,
mm-hmm.
on the table.
I know of three projects that I'm thinking of. One is the kind of the legal project to get people informed about the necessity defense and to keep an eye on sleeping tickets that are coming into the courts in increasing numbers in spite of the fact that very few actual tickets are given out in December, January, and February. A lot of hassles, but not a lot of tickets. A second project, of course, is the street action that's happening 3 o'clock on Sunday when the Coalition Against the Sleeping Ban will meet in front of New Leaf Market. And then there's a third kind of Query the Merchants project that has been proposed, which is going to go from merchant to merchant in downtown Santa Cruz and see just where they stand on the issue of basic human rights in their own town, and then perhaps decisions can be made by the community as to which merchants should be patronized and which shouldn't. I'm sorry, you were saying?
Oh, you take the thunder right out of me, Robert.
I'm sorry, Bernard. I'm racing the clock here, so I sometimes use the callers as an opportunity to kind of bring them up to date on these subjects, but I know you have something you want to say.
I want to just put out four committees that I see as an expansion
mm-hmm.
of the committee to repeal the sleeping ban.
You'll be at our meeting tomorrow, perhaps?
Robert, I'm not going to be able to be at your meeting tomorrow.
Okay, well,
let me put out my...
Go for it.
I think. Thank you. The four branches I see would be, one, we would have a political action committee. This committee would make searches for candidates for the 2000-year city council election, or it might suggest that we join other forces, that do want the sleeping ban repealed.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one thing. The second committee would be an economic committee that would begin the question of looking at the boycott of downtown merchants, that would do all the necessary legwork on that. The third part of the committee would be what I would call a tribunal committee that would look into the whole question of police brutality, would take facts, would do anything, would leave off where the police review board is not doing. And finally, the fourth committee would be a homeless committee that would be organized by the homeless themselves. They could be the ones out there doing a lot of the picketing around the economic boycott, because they would have more time than some of us workers.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this whole thing coming together, and I also see, we would need a coordinator, to make sure that all these four committees, flow together.
Mm-hmm.
In a harmonious way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm putting out on the table, and I would like to hear other people talk about that, get some pros and cons.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Bernard.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And, hey, you got some thoughts on Bernard's ideas, or if you want to volunteer your help on this, or got some ideas of any sort, give us a call. Here, there's one calling now. Even as we're speaking, CalPERG's Hunger and Homelessness Committee is meeting up at the Student Center on campus, in case you happen to be listening to us on campus.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello.
Now, you've got to be more patient with me, callers. Give me at least three rings. Otherwise, I'm going to be stuck listening to myself for the next half hour. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you are also invited to call and to listen and to watch Channel 71 at 7:30. A debate on the sleeping ban is going to be coming up, and there's already debate on the fluoridation issue.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Well, I don't know if it's the equipment or some sort of hex put on us, but we're having problems with the line. Keep trying, folks. And I hope we don't have problems with the microphone, but we do have, periodically, we do have problems here. So let's turn to a few other voices while we're waiting for calls. Caller, try again. If you, at first you don't succeed, try again. So I think we're hoping that our tapes are still working, and let's see how we do with turning to city council.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I hope we aren't having a prankster on the lines. Here's city council and a few really fine speeches from the proceedings of Tuesday night.
I'm a member of the local chapter of the Amnesty International, and the coalition is as a group in favor of lifting the sleeping ban. Poverty is not a crime, sleep is not a crime, criminalizing the poor for being poor is a crime. The sleeping ban is just another way of suppressing those who do not or cannot fit the mold of mainstream America. The ban is classes and a violation of basic human rights. There are no facts to support the notion that with legalizing the sleep, that homeless people would be more likely to commit crimes such as kidnapping children. Unfortunately, there are criminals out there who prey on children, and parents must be vigilant to protect their children. But targeting homeless people is not the answer to this. There are bad elements in every segment of our society. People who commit crimes of these could be rich, could be poor, could be a homeowner, could be homeless, could be a cop, could be a priest, a judge, and relative. Addressing homelessness and sleep is not the same as addressing crimes like kidnappings. I repeat, homeless people are not more likely to commit such crimes. If you see someone committing a crime outside your home, call the police, but do not attack people for sleeping. Sleep is not a crime, it's a basic need and right. I am not homeless, but I have been several times in the past. I have lived in my vehicle, and I held down a job. I did not rely on public assistance, and I did not break any laws other than sleeping. I was clean, quiet, respectful. I knew and know many homeless people exactly like myself. Of the people I know, most received several tickets after being at work in the middle of the night. Usually these people were sleeping in the industrial areas near natural bridges and were parked nowhere near homes. From my experience, most homeless people are clean, respectful, but others are not criminals. Unfortunately, they do not get the attention that the few troublemakers get. I repeat, criminalizing homelessness and sleep is wrong. Address real crimes. And I feel that there should be, most areas of the city should be open for sleeping, especially in industrial areas and near parks. Thank you.
Brazil Community Action Board, I'm Shelter Project Director there. I love our Constitution. I have ever since I became aware of it. And recently, it was interesting, I now love another country's Constitution more. And it was ironic, the choice of that Constitution, because this country took our Constitution, when they wrote the Constitution, and then looked at what did we leave out and put those in, like the Equal Rights Amendment for women, like making certain that people weren't discriminated against because of their sexual orientation, and the right to housing, and then South Africa, of all places. I mean, if I had thought that 10 years ago, I would have immediately discounted it as science fiction. But that's the truth that exists. And when we think about our long-term goals, I know that we are on the same path, because I've talked with all of you. I know that you would support a constitutional amendment to a right to housing. But we're not there yet. And while we work on these long-term issues, and we at CAP really do support an ongoing task force, or maybe even elevating it to the level of a commission, to look at the long-term solutions, and to look at short-term solutions. We still have the very real fear in our community that I think is blocking you from being able to make the decisions that you might want to make. That there is a misconception on the part of even compassionate and progressive peoples that there is a greater criminality among poor or homeless people. That if we somehow are more compassionate, we will attract large numbers. And some of you over the past weeks and months have asked me to see if I could find any data that would give us some kind of a clue as to whether or not that was true. And the data that is there, the data that I was able to find, does not in any way indicate that there is a magnet effect. If you are more compassionate, poor people don't come running to you. If anything, the studies, the existing data, which is available to all of you now, because we made it available to the task force, shows that poor people don't migrate as much as any of us had thought previously. And they certainly don't migrate for better welfare benefits or more shelter spaces. They don't. There is no study, and I would challenge anyone who has one to bring it so that we could see it. There is no study that shows that people will flock to a more compassionate community. There isn't any. But I do have to admit there is a small regional magnet effect compassionate community. I will acknowledge. And I think that's appropriate. So my hope is that you'll make the right decisions at some point in the future rather than be forced to by a court.
Yeah.
All right.
My name is Paul Burke, and I'm here to urge you to remove all references to sleeping from the camping ordinance. Vagrancy ordinances that preceded it across this country in the 50s and 60s before they were thrown out by the courts. The sleeping ban is a catch-all regulation designed to control a wide range of any social disturbing activities which are unrelated to the specific offense cited. The sleeping ban gives the police the flexibility to cite individuals for this clear and easily defined infraction when they suspect other crimes for which they have insufficient proof. These other crimes are usually difficult to control using existing misdemeanor statutes, but these crimes are what offend and threaten the public, not sleeping. I would like to quote a short statement from the task force report that you read before, but concerns of the citizenry regarding camping / sleeping are focused more on the behavioral problems of some campers than on the physical act of sleeping. Unacceptable behaviors, including all the things we've heard of before, are included. While there are separate code provisions to deal with these behaviors, their enforcement requires actual police observation and/or considerably greater involvement by citizen complainants. And that's the core of it. And there you have it. Considerably greater involvement by citizen complainants. In other words, the convenience of the sleeping ban is what is driving this dangerous erosion of personal freedom. These criminal and antisocial activities have absolutely nothing to do with sleeping or the needs of the homeless. They have to do with recklessly simplified solutions to complex problems. You don't need to be soft on crime to be rational about a sleeping ban. If you want to get tough on real threats to quality of life and public safety, double the fines for littering, quadruple the fines for littering. Strictly enforce noise ordinances. Let it be known that the Santa Cruz police will be down on you like a ton of bricks if you engage in threatening behavior or assault. Public drunkenness and use of illegal drugs is already illegal. Enforce the laws that already exist. We cannot expect to anonymously call 911, report a crime we have witnessed, and watch hidden behind our curtains while the police use the sleeping ban as the tool for controlling unrelated crimes that they don't witness. If the police ask a citizen to assist them by signing a complaint, that citizen needs to cooperate, even if cooperation is inconvenient or unpleasant. We cannot substitute this fuzzy-headed ordinance for citizen involvement in policing their own communities. The job of the city council is not to make it easy for residents to call city service every time they have a gripe with something going on in their neighborhood, like calling the police when your neighbor's stereo is too loud because it's too much of a hassle or too threatening to actually go out and speak to the neighbor yourself, whether they live in a house or a car. This This paranoia is so extreme, it's become self-destructive to our entire community. I believe we need to find ways to support citizen involvement in neighborhood activities that go beyond dialing a phone, leaving a complaint, and relying on a sleeping ban of all the absurd bureaucratic constructions to deliver us from fear of our own neighbors. Thank you.
And that was Dan Burke, or Donald Burke, I'm sorry. It was Mr. Burke, in any case. He's a tall guy, and he's actually a close friend of Christopher Crone. I only wish that Crone would talk to him more. The real problem to me has been not that there weren't a lot of really good things said at that 7.5-hour meeting, but that the really powerful organizations, SCAN, WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, didn't seem to be up there saying them, you know. Bernice Belton, co-chair, didn't say a word. Skip Spitzer seemed to be mincing his words, and the two of them co-signed a letter from SCAN, which essentially endorsed the buyer's position. And buyer's position was to make these cosmetic changes, changes in hours, changes in fines, this winter shelter armory amendment, which might have some point next winter, but certainly has no point now. And it was just really too little. Not just too little, it was avoiding the basic question.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
So, I distributed a flyer on the subject, which I began to read you earlier, called Good Faith Effort or Premature Burial, Seven Solutions the Task Force Ignored. And why am I so hard on the task force? Why do I come down so heavily on perhaps the people that are most likely to vote for positive change? Crone, Sugar, Fitzmaurice, even Byers to some extent. Well, because they've spent months and months and they haven't really dealt with the big issue of the sleeping ban itself, the sleeping ban sections, and they've raised so many fears about lifting the camping ordinance. And most important, they fail to come out and advocate, really advocate for these issues when they have the power to do so. And particularly impressed me with Crone and Sugar that they have a majority on the task force, which I've called the task farce, and I think properly so. Even if Byers has one perspective and they have another, certainly they could come out with their own perspective instead of waiting until the very last minute, which is what they did at the city council meeting, and making proposed changes that failed. Perhaps they would have failed anyway. I mean, perhaps they would be a minority position, but they would have been better prepared. Their organizations would have been behind them. They would have had some communication with other activists. Instead, they have essentially not led on this issue. They have not said there has to be a change in the law that makes it criminal to sleep so that people can sleep somewhere. And that's the core position. That's the position SCAN had, WILF had, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, many student groups, 3,000 citizens in Santa Cruz signed that. They've refused to come out for that until incrementally in these positions at city council when they come up with an amendment that moves in that direction, but is so badly put together that it fails to even have any real credibility. That's what happened with Keith Sugar. Keith proposed actually a variation of a proposal that Sandy Brown of the Community Action Board came up with, which was that there should be no, the police should not even consider giving out tickets under the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance and the blanket sections of the camping ordinance unless there was a shelter bed available that night and the shelter had called in to say so, because during the summer it's proper to assume that there are no shelter beds because there are beds for less than 30 people and they're always taken up by people who are disabled or waiting in line or ill. I mean, they're taken up all the time. There's really no time when there are real emergency shelter spaces available for the overwhelming majority of homeless people. Instead of proposing that, Sugar made a proposal that there be no camping ban enforcement, which meant he raised the specter of the entire ordinance being lifted throughout 8 months of the year, which I don't think actually is that bad an idea. I don't think it would be that horrible. But it is a more radical idea, and it was one that wasn't even discussed in his task force. So for him to come up with these changes without preparing the public, without mobilizing people, is a way of a self-fulfilling prophecy of defeat. Now maybe it's just the first round, and maybe he'll come up with them again. But the last time he came up with them, which was on December 8th, and Byers swatted him down, as she did again at the council meeting on Tuesday, when Sugar proposed no tickets unless there's a public health and safety concern that's real on December 8th, and he was voted down. He took that so hard that he didn't return phone calls for weeks. He actually has substantially had no conversations with me at all. He regards me as sort of an arch villain or a destructive or disruptive influence because I've been so critical of Catherine Byers, who he somehow feels is so essential that he will maintain and Crone will maintain their own public posture in solidarity with her even when she's going in the wrong direction. And I think people have to tell Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, this is not the way to go. They have to tell these council members that they have to publicly advocate for the right position, even if it's a minority position right now, even if they can't get the votes for it right now, because it's only through that kind of process that they ever will get the votes. And I've always said that because they got so many votes in their landslide election, and because so many people in Santa Cruz really do believe that ticketing for sleeping is cruel and preposterous and an anti-homeless move and unnecessary, and that there are better ways to deal with it, that they really, they have the majority. They just don't have the majority of the downtown association. They don't have the majority of the Chamber of Commerce. They don't have the majority of the steering committee of the Downtown Neighbors Association or the Harvey West Association. Well, that's life. You know, that's how it goes. They probably don't have the majority of Canfield's board of directors either out at the Beach Boardwalk. But hey, you know, there are worse majorities worse bodies not to have a majority on. Anyway, the flyer I circulated that night asked why this task force undertook no investigation and public discussion of these seven proposals. And here are seven proposals that the task force didn't even examine. And what I'm trying to show here is, yeah, here are seven good proposals. We should think about them. We should talk about them. We should hope that Crone and Sugar come up with them again on March 24th or sooner. But we should realize what is really happening here, that it is a cosmetic and fraudulent process. That it's not a case, as the scan letter said, of they're going far, but not far enough, of making a few good steps, but they have to go further. They are making no good steps in any fundamental way until they really address the issue of the sleeping ban. It's like proposing token seats for the blacks in Mississippi in 1964, as Lyndon Johnson did at the Democratic Convention, without giving them real power and kicking Strom Thurmond and his segregationists out. You don't do that, particularly when the majority of people who elected you don't support such bigotry. And bigotry is the word we're talking about on these anti-homeless issues that you hear people talking about. You heard Peter Eberle, for example, of the Downtown Association, voicing what he said would be the fears of some people that folks in vans, the kids would have to walk past folks in vans, and who knows, there might be kidnappers there. I see that as a way of kind of talking about, like, in a similar way that blacks were discussed in the 50s and saying there might be rapists there. This is hate speech. I talked to Peter about this before the show, and I invited him to call in and talk about it, and he's invited to call in now and talk about it. I think that he has to explain himself on this position. He has to explain exactly what he meant when he said those kinds of things before the city council. I'm not sure if I have this segment of the tape here, and there are so many hours of this tape to get through, and I'll tell you, this show needs some organizing. If any of you out there are interested or seasoned and want to help us put together a better Bathrop Spears Broadsides, or better still, if you want to do your own show on civil rights for the poor, Free Radio Santa Cruz is an open collective, provided that you're not into hate speech and you want your concern with human rights issues. Hey, I think that the collective would love to have some more people. Voicemail number to call if you want to get involved is 427-4523. 427-4523. So anyway, here are seven proposals that the city council ignored. one you've heard already, the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, which would have made sleeping legal in the appropriate zones of the city, away from the downtown, the boardwalk, and residential areas. The Florida Pottinger Guidelines, which I've talked about a bit in past shows, which require police to offer a shelter bed before a homeless person can be ticketed, and that has been enforced in Miami since October 1998. Safety from the Trollbusters proposal by local attorney Kate Wells, which would have authorized the city council to immediately set up safe zones under park and rec regulations in Harvey West or the San Lorenzo Benchlands, and I've talked about that. The Santa Barbara Camping Sleeping Ban Distinction, which legalized sleeping between 1986 and 1989, allowing homeless people to carry no more bedding than can be backpacked, while real camping remained a crime. Then there was the Santa Monica Vehicle Occupancy Law, a fifth proposal, which allows police to warn any occupied vehicle in a residential neighborhood parked between midnight and 5 a.m. to move along, but not to get a ticket for sleeping unless they refuse to move along. So it provides a way that residents could deal with the situation. It's not really too respectful of the rights of homeless people, but it is another proposal. Six, the Santa Cruz County zoning approach, which criminalizes sleeping only in no camping zones and allows emergency roadside resting in a vehicle throughout the county. And finally, the Santa Cruz Community Action Board's resolution, no enforcement of the whole camping ordinance generally until there is adequate shelter space, based on the straightforward perspective and the moral dictate that you cannot criminalize someone for sheltering themselves if there is no shelter for them otherwise. You can't stop them from putting up a tent somewhere against the elements. That's just not acceptable in our society. I pointed out that the task force hearings hobbled homeless participation. You've heard about that. No homeless people or activists were a part of the regular staff or invited as information resources throughout the focus groups and regular meetings. Those who meet shall not eat was the bad news that the council gave us, the task force, since its meetings at 4 p.m. conflicted with the homeless service center's free meal dinner a mile away. There was no amnesty for sleeping warrants, which meant that homeless people with warrants for sleeping could not attend the meetings without fear of arrest. There was no suspension of the sleeping ban during the hearings, which meant that homeless people were distracted with fear of harassment while those in houses got their 8 hours each night. Hardly an even playing field. And there was no action to protect the vulnerable from trollbusters, such as a safe zone or increased police patrols. And that made homeless participation difficult and problematic. Time for a musical break. Or perhaps a poetry break.
The Sproul Hall sit-in for the 30th anniversary of the free speech movement. I remember telling my legs, you are going into that building, no way. Stop walking, legs. You listen to me. My legs didn't listen. They walked into Sproul Hall carrying me with them. I was scared silly and not just of the cops. Joan Baez was singing. It was too beautiful, the way the air on a high mountain is too clear. I was scared of the beauty. It was hard to breathe. I remember everything. Girls dressed like secretaries, boys dressed like law clerks, and we expected America to keep the promises it made in eighth grade social studies. Free speech, freedom to assemble. I remember the food when we didn't get arrested at once. Organized people brought cardboard boxes of cardboard bologna sandwiches and oranges. But I also remember a big cauldron of cold spaghetti and even a tin of caviar, and we took a fingernail each till it was gone. I remember classes springing up in every corner. I remember passing the huge black walnut table in the lobby. The Constitution was probably signed at a table just like it, and a TA was standing on the table giving a lecture about the War of the Roses to his class, who were sitting under the table, cross-legged and taking notes. It looked like a scene from a foreign art film, but the subtitle was the Bill of Rights. About every 45 minutes, someone would hear the cops were on their way, but people did try to sleep. That was the first time I saw TV cameras. They don't look electrical. They look like high noon on another planet. These are the protesters asleep in Sproul Hall, the reporters said, and they shone those cameras and everyone woke up. It was a long night. It isn't over yet. I got arrested by a young black cop with a big Adam's apple. He was half my weight and looked at me and said, "Please, miss, don't go limp." Nothing went as planned. I hadn't planned to be there. Part of me hasn't left. I remember a light brighter than the TV cameras, stronger than fear. I remember us.
And that was Julia Vinograd from her latest tape. She's a Berkeley poet and a fine one. Well, a very important decision came down in January called In re James Warner Eichhorn from the Fourth Appellate District Court, one of the state courts, about sleeping bans. And I wrote an article about it earlier today. But I'd like to read you selections from the decision, which you can find in the Law Library, the Daily Appellate Report of Friday, January 22nd, 1999. It's the newspaper that you'll see directly to your right as you walk into the Law Library in the basement of the county building. And what this was a decision which said to a judge, you've got to allow necessity as a defense to a charge of violating a city ordinance banning sleeping in public areas. And that means that sleeping is so important that a person can argue that even if though they violated the law, even though that that's proven, or even if they admit it, and I think you actually have to begin by admitting that you violated the law, that you did so to avert a greater evil. And I'm going to read you about James Eichhorn. James Eichhorn was convicted of a misdemeanor violation of a City of Santa Ana ordinance banning sleeping in designated public areas. He was cited for violation of the city's anti-camping ordinance on the evening of January 25, 1993, following a detour to the Supreme Court that established the ordinance was facially constitutional, Tobe versus City of Santa Ana, 1995. Eichhorn's case eventually went to trial. In a significant pretrial ruling, the court, Judge Brooks, determined Eichhorn could not present a necessity defense to a jury. Eichhorn had offered to prove that on the night of the violation, every shelter bed within the city that was available to a homeless single man with no children was occupied, and that he was involuntarily homeless, i.e., he had done everything he could to alleviate his condition. Due to circumstances beyond his control, defendant, a 14-year resident of Santa Ana, had been unable to find work as a manual laborer that paid enough to allow him to find an alternate place to sleep. The court determined defendant had not made a sufficient showing to allow a jury to consider his necessity defense. This was the lower court, and we're reading the decision that overturned that lower court. It appears that the defense of necessity, said the lower court, is not supported by the offer of proof. The first element wasn't satisfied in the court's view. No significant imminent evil for this defendant or any other person. The court's questions and comments suggested it was not impressed with the defendant's claim that lack of sleep was a significant evil. The judge made comments like, "What do you mean bodily harm, like tired eyelids or blood? If he didn't sleep here, he'd lose sleep, and this would be a horrible physical thing to impose on him." The camping law that James Eichhorn was accused of violating said, "It shall be unlawful for any person to camp, occupy camp facilities, or use camp paraphernalia in the following areas except as otherwise provided: any street, any public parking lot, or public area, improved or unimproved. Camp paraphernalia included a sleeping bag." So this law, you can see, is actually less than Santa Cruz's ordinance, which bans sleeping specifically, and which includes a lot of private property as well. But continue now with the Eichhorn case. Defendant objected that the court's ruling, quote, not only goes against what we understand to have been the statements and admissions by the people and by Judge Marginis, who had previously handled the case, but undermines the whole reason why we were going forward at trial. It clearly eviscerated our entire defense. That is, Judge Brooks ruled that James Eichhorn could not use a necessity defense, could not say that he had to sleep, he had to violate the sleeping law, the camping law, to prevent a greater evil. In light of Judge Brooks' ruling on the necessity defense, and noting there was no dispute Eichhorn was in a sleeping bag in the Civic Center on the night in question, Eichhorn's lawyer agreed to go forward without a jury on the constitutional issue whether the ordinance was unconstitutional as applied to him based on his alleged involuntary homelessness. So the defense that Eichhorn's lawyer used was not that he had to sleep, but that he was involuntarily homeless and therefore the ordinance was unconstitutional. Trial commenced without a jury in May 1996. Officer Carol Craig testified defendant was in a sleeping bag on the ground at about 10:30 p.m. outside a county office building in the Civic Center. He was using his clothes as a pillow. Craig asked, as she always did, why Eichhorn wasn't at the National Guard Armory, a homeless shelter several miles away. A bus from the Civic Center to the Armory usually picked up people between 5 and 6 p.m. According to Craig's police report, defendant replied he had tried a while back. It was full, so he never returned. The court judicially noticed that the walk between the Civic Center and the Armory was through very dangerous areas of town. Police photographed and cited Eichhorn, that is, gave him a ticket, then asked him to move on. He complied. James Meeker, a professor at the University of California, Irvine, in the Department of Criminology, Law, and Society, testified he had conducted a study on homelessness in January and February 1993. There were more than 3,000 homeless individuals in Orange County during this period. Most homeless were long-term residents of Orange County, average 14 years, who had lost jobs and could not afford housing. The county had relatively little affordable housing and had been decreasing. Single men at a particularly difficult time because they were less likely to receive the support from family, friends, or governmental agencies. Most were sleeping outdoors because they had no other choice. Homeless individuals were 10 times as likely to be victimized by crime than the average population. Many homeless stayed in urban areas because of proximity to assistance providers, food, clothing, and shelter, day jobs, just 8% were unemployed and not looking for jobs, public facilities, restrooms, etc., and the lack of transportation. Timothy Shaw was the executive director of the Orange County Homeless Issues Task Force. He pegged the number of homeless in Santa Ana at about 1,500 persons in 1993. There were about 118 shelter beds available for single men like Eichhorn. That's less than 5%, less than 8%. Most available on a first-come, first-served basis. In addition, the Armory could accommodate 125 persons during the winter, additionally, though it frequently exceeded its capacity. As it was routine, these shelters were full on the night Eichhorn was sighted. Maria Mendoza was the county's homeless coordinator and oversaw use of the Armory as a shelter. The Armory was available only on cold winter nights. She explained how the bus to the Armory would leave from the Civic Center in the late afternoon. Those on the bus had priority at the Armory. Eichhorn had spent some 20 nights there in December and January. On January 23rd, the Armory was 13 persons over capacity, which was not uncommon. That the Armory would accept excess capacity was not a given. Usually only those at risk, e.g. women and children, would be admitted after the maximum was reached, and generally only when it was raining. Eichhorn, 49 years old, testified he had moved to Costa Mesa in 1972, a few years after his discharge from the Marine Corps. The Vietnam veteran lost his job in a machine shop in 1980 and subsequently ended up without a place to live. He moved to Santa Ana because a friend told him about a job driving an ice cream truck. He sold ice cream for about a year and was able to afford a motel room. When he lost that job, he frequented the casual labor office in Santa Ana until it closed. When he moved and could save enough, he would live in a motel. He also relied on general relief and food stamps. However, general relief was no longer enough to assure affordable housing because most of the less expensive motels had been torn down. If he could not get into a shelter, Eichhorn would sleep in the Civic Center, where he was close to services including restrooms and where there was safety in numbers, i.e., where it was less likely that someone would steal or attack you while you slept. He loved to work and did so at every chance he got. He did not like living outside. He had been turned away from the armory in the past and had a nervous walk back to the Civic Center. On January 25th, he did not recall whether he had tried to find a spot at a shelter or whether he had heard the shelters were full. He recalled eating around 7 p.m. He was in a sleeping bag listening to his radio when Officer Craig arrived about 10:30. Eichhorn's mother and stepfather lived in Long Beach, but staying with them was not an option because he was an adult responsible for himself. Defendant denied a problem with alcohol and drugs. Jane Maroon, program manager for food stamps and general relief of the County of Orange, testified Eichhorn received food stamps on a regular basis from 1989 through 1993, except when he was employed in parts of 1991 and 1992. He was eligible for $307 monthly in general relief if he participated in a work program, working 9 days a month, and looked for work, 4 job applications per day. He last received general relief in November 1990 and was terminated because he did not submit a job search report. He applied for relief in March and June 1992, but was denied. The court found Eichhorn had violated the camping ordinance and was not involuntarily homeless on the night in question, finding he chose not to go to the armory. This is the lower court that this decision throws out. He also suggested defendant should have sought out familial assistance and should have applied for general relief. The court ordered him to perform 40 hours of community services. By a 2-to-1 margin, the appellate division of the Superior Court affirmed the conviction without opinion and declined to certify the case to the court for direct review. Eichhorn then filed with this higher court, which found that he did have a right, and he did have a right to use the necessity defense to claim that he had to sleep. And when we return on Sunday, we will be studying that decision more fully. Come back then and join us with Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We're going to go directly into, I'm not sure, do you want to go directly into your show, Dennis, or how are we doing? Do you want a little more time to prepare?
Give me a minute.
Okay. You've been listening to me read from the Eichhorn decision, which is the decision that now allows people who have to sleep outside, who sleep in vehicles or on property, but which violates the sleeping ban. We're not talking about trespass, but violates the sleeping ban, gives them a right to argue that they had no other choice. They were doing it to avert a greater evil. And one of those evils, as this court decision we will hear on Sunday tells us, is sleep. Sleep is a physiological need, says the court decision, not an option for humans. It is common knowledge that loss of sleep produces a host of physical and mental problems: mood irritability, energy drain and low motivation, slow reaction time, inability to concentrate and process information. Certainly no one would suggest that a groggy truck driver who stops his rig on the side of a road rather than risk falling asleep at the wheel does not act to prevent a significant evil, i.e. harm to himself and others. Indeed, Judge Margenes, the judge who looked at this case before Judge Brook, had denied Eichhorn's request for funds to hire an expert to testify about the harmful effects of sleep loss because he said, I mean, it doesn't take an expert to tell us that to convince a person that there are ill effects that arise from sleep deprivation. The defense of necessity is required where there is evidence sufficient to establish that the defendant violated a law, one, to prevent a significant evil, two, with no adequate alternative, three, without creating a greater danger than the one avoided, four, with a good faith belief in the necessity, five, with such belief being objectively reasonable, and six, under circumstances in which he did not substantially contribute to the emergency. The defense of necessity is founded upon public policy and provides a justification distinct from the elements required to prove the crime. The situation presented of the defendant must be of an emergency nature, threatening physical harm and lacking an alternative legal course of action. The defense involves a determination that the harm or evil sought to be avoided by such conduct is greater than that sought to be prevented by the law defining the offense charged. Are we ready, Dennis?
Is that all there is to a defense of necessity?
That's it, man. You just prove that and you can go out there and shoot the president. No, you can't even talk about that. Forget I said that, everybody.
watch it, Robert.
Hey, man, I'm just speaking metaphorically here. I wouldn't want to suggest any such course of action. Actually, I'm not a violent person. I don't propose that. But I think one should be able to talk about whatever one wants, frankly.
But you should be able to sleep next to the president.
Well, it depends on who you are, and I guess whether you want your name in the papers. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This has been Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, the cool program on Thursday evenings. I'm taking your stuff with me. No, I can't have that. And the place is just covered with papers. I'm going to, as soon as Dennis is ready to go, I'm going to give up my seat here, so just give
Anytime.
Me... And I suppose I have to leave now. Well, fine. Thank you for being with us. Come on back, 11 o'clock on Sunday. And please, if you can, come to the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, tomorrow, 10:30 at 706 Frederick Street. See you then.
Thank you, Robert. I heard we had some really wonderful... Oh, these are terrible.
The equipment.
Oh, I guess I'll just have to persevere here, even though my head feels like it's in a vice.
Well.
Okay. Oh, that's better. It's kind of weird. Yeah, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and stay tuned for Earth First Radio. We're going to get it on here in just a minute, as soon as I can clean up about... some of the mess around here.
I didn't do it.
I know you didn't do it, Robert. I know. Let's see. Yeah, sign the log, Robert. Sign the log. Yeah, what is Free Radio all about? Well, it's that we can do anything, including sloppy changeovers from one programmer to another.
Informal. Really informal. Changeovers.
Humanistic, holistic. And basically, this ain't a job, folks, so we can have all the fun we want here. Nobody gets paid. Nobody has any money.
Happy trails.
See you, Robert. Folks can check you out, what, 11:30 on Sunday, right?
11 on Sunday.
That's right.
Okay.
11 on Sunday for more of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with Robert Norse. Okie dokie. Well, oh, buzzing, humming things. Cool. All right. Well, one thing Free Radio really needs is your help. If you can possibly help out, send money to whatever you want to do, anyway. I thought somebody was calling in. Anyway. Yeah, it's the telephone. It's all weird. Anyway, Free Radio Santa Cruz, even though we don't get paid, it still takes money to run this place. We've got the rent to pay. We've got phone bill to pay.